Hello and welcome to another episode of the Shock Doctors Podcast. I'm Jim Smith.
I'm Matt Gerandese.
Matt doesn't seem so sure, but we are the Shock Doctors.
You know, sometimes you just, it's just one of those days, you know?
This episode, we're going to be discussing the new Gator creature feature, Crawl, directed by a man whose name I have come to find out I've been pronouncing all wrong. It's Alexandre Aja.
I don't even know my own name today, evidently. So
Alexandre Aja. I believe I said aha in the in the preview message at the end of the last episode.
We've been mispronouncing this guy's name for years. It's always been saying his last name was always like a eureka moment for us.
Alexandre Aja.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But yes, Alexandre Aja. So, yeah.
He's made his first out-and-out good movie, at least the first one that I've seen that I've just kind of unabashedly liked, so I guess it's about time that we started paying him some deference.
Yeah, get the man's fucking name right.
So. And for your credit where it's due, I've not seen his remake of The Hills Have Eyes. It's supposed to be okay.
It's fine.
I didn't like High Tension as much as most people, but it's also mostly fine. But yeah, no, Crawl is pretty good stuff. Yeah, it's pretty good stuff.
Well, how about you tell the folks about it, Matt?
Yeah, don't mind if I do. So it opens with, what do you call it? Like a not a relay race. What do they call it when it's underwater?
It's still a relay.
Is it? Okay.
I think.
So the movie opens with a swimming relay. We meet Haley, the protagonist, who comes in second and takes the loss in stride, but clearly aspires to greater things, and we get a flashback to her as a young girl doing some kind of swim competition, being given a pep talk by her father, whose name is Dave. She gets a phone call from her sister, who says that there's a Category 5 hurricane bearing down on Florida, where Haley and her father live, although they're estranged. They live a couple hours apart. He's like South Florida. She's further north. And Haley takes it upon herself to go check on him and proceeds to drive 2 hours south directly into an alligator's jaws, essentially.
More or less. She gets stopped along the way by a cop who knows her. Apparently, this is a guy who...
His name is Wayne.
His name is Wayne, who had a bit of a thing with her older sister back in the day. Apparently he remembers it a lot more fondly than she does,
right?
Which often seems to be the way of these things. He doesn't want to let her pass. She keeps trying to sweet talk him into, you know, I know the roads, I just have to pop in, I gotta see if my dad's okay. And he just won't bend, so she first moves to turn around and then reconsiders and kind of wheels around on a side track and passes the roadblock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is all happening in a torrential downpour because the hurricane is due any minute. I mean, They're already feeling the effects of it. She makes it to the dingy apartment where her dad has been living. It's strewn with memorabilia and photographs, sports trophies, things from her childhood and her sister's childhood, relics of a bygone age when their parents were still together. They've separated. There's a lot of planting in the beginning, you know, family drama, stuff that's going to pay off later. And the dog is there, but the dad is nowhere to be seen. So she grabs the pup, and they hit the road together and go to the old house, as she refers to it, where they all used to live as a family. It's kind of the most emotionally fraught arena possible for this
to fight, like, gators.
Yeah, right. And for this father-daughter reconciliation that's inevitably going to happen.
So she spends a rather extended period of time, I thought, kind of poking around in the house looking for him.
Yeah, there is a surprising amount of pre-gator buildup. A lot of it is Chekhov's gun stuff. Well, actually, I don't know how much of it is. There's at least one Chekhov screwdriver that's like her. Some of the poking and prodding ends up paying off dividends later in the movie, because it at least gives you a basic idea of the layout of the house, which becomes important. That's not something you would want to have to try to establish in the heat of the moment. But yeah, it does. I don't know if it drags. I actually kind of appreciated it just because this movie is already so short that I was surprised that it took the gators as long as it did for them to show up. That's an uncharacteristic restraint for Mr. Aja.
Yeah. So After checking pretty much everywhere but the basement, she reluctantly heads into the basement. And it barely even qualifies as a cellar, really. It's very dingy and grimy.
Basically a crawl space, hence the title.
And again, it takes a while for her to find anything. And at last, she finds bloody fingerprints, handprints, on some pipes running on the ceiling. And then kind of tracks that to her unconscious, but still, thankfully, very much alive father, who has kind of a big old bite taken out of his left shoulder. So she successfully rouses him, and pretty soon after that, we're off to the races.
Yeah, we got our first gator sighting, first off in the distance, kind of out of focus, and then it comes bursting through the steps leading down into the cellar and comes waddling towards them. And she is dragging her dad on a tarp. He's still out of commission. And they take refuge behind a kind of rack of pipes that the gators can't seem to gnaw their way through. So it's established relatively efficiently that there are safe zones, relatively speaking, in the basement, and danger zones, which is how we get periodic, dialogue breaks. So it's not literally just running away from alligators for 90 minutes, which would get kind of fatiguing.
That'd be a little much. So they have their sort of initial prickly reunion conversation.
Uh-huh.
Haley sees that she dropped her phone out in the danger zone.
Right.
And is determined to go get it. Dave says, nah, nobody's coming. Not worth it. She insists. And then she goes and kind of ducks and dodges and makes it to the phone totally unscathed. And then in a real head-scratching moment, she starts calling 911 from there.
Yeah, right there on the spot. And it's annoying because, I mean, unforced errors are always irritating in horror movies, but this is her only kind of boneheaded move in the whole movie. She's otherwise very practical and resourceful. So I think it just reeks of a screenwriter trying to get the cell phone out of the picture, because horror movies always struggle with the cell phone problem these days, and I feel like there must have been a better way of doing that. It's a real kind of a blunder.
Well, and it's just, I don't know, it wouldn't have been that much harder to get rid of it anyway, because what ends up happening is,
right,
she gets the phone, she starts dialing, she has to run from the gator.
Well, it's here that it's revealed that there's more than one alligator in the basement, which is maybe not a huge bombshell, but it's something that she was not counting on.
Sure.
So
she's dodging, and she nearly makes it back to the pipes, gets chomped on the leg, successfully wriggles free, but loses the phone. And we don't even see her lose the phone. We just eventually, after she gets free, see a shot of it sitting out, and then it gets promptly stomped by a gator. What are their appendages called?
A foot?
I guess.
A claw, maybe?
Gator claw. Gator claw. Yeah, we'll go with that. Just smashed. So, feel like they could have had that exact same shot just set up in a slightly more elegant way. It wouldn't have been much more difficult, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to invent little goals for the characters to try to accomplish in a survival scenario. And the goalposts in this movie keep shifting. First, it's get the phone, and then it's, we'll get there when we get there. But the point is that I don't mind them coming up with, like, a reason for her to expose herself to danger. But, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. As I said, cell phones are and have been a major stumbling block for horror movies. Even in a horror movie like this one that does almost everything right, it does cell phone stuff wrong. It's just the Achilles heel of the genre, I think.
Yeah. So it's around this time that water starts kind of trickling and then flooding into the basement in earnest.
Yeah, they got like a radio down there. The dad came to the house, the old house, initially to, I think he said, board up some vents.
Yeah.
But it's clear that he's just having a hard time letting go.
Yeah.
And moving on with his life. And he's got a radio down there that he was listening to while he's doing his maintenance. And a surprising amount of the first half of this movie is set to just like willy-doo, just hard rock tunes. But it's useful in that, it's a useful device, I mean, in that you do occasionally get updates issued from the radio, weather advisories and things like that.
Yeah.
And one of which says that the levees aren't going to hold much longer, and there's a flash flood warning that comes over the airwaves. So there's a ticking clock in that even if the gators don't get them, the basement will flood in relatively short order.
Yeah. And Dave, throughout much of the rest of the movie, is repeatedly using a tape measure and comparing it against his watch to see just how fast it's filling up.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is pretty fast.
Yeah, right.
So
it's at this point that we get the first of several little detours that the movie goes on where other characters show up to promptly get gobbled, characters that we're not rooting for. Just kind of bodies on the pile. Wayne has this written all over him from the moment he's introduced. You know, it's like, oh, this guy's going to show up later and promptly get chomped.
He's not the first.
He's not the first. First is a trio of looters who are wreaking havoc in a gas station across the way. And she tries to flag them down. She's, you know, hollering and waving a flashlight.
And one of the looters, he's kind of taking a few intent steps in her direction, thinking about helping his girlfriend, who's in the boat into which they've loaded a fucking ATM, is yelling at him to get back in the boat so they could leave. His brother, the third looter, is still in the gas station, taking everything he can get his hands on.
Yeah, right.
At one point, he takes a hot dog out of the display case. Who knows how long that's been there? More so than an average gas station hot dog.
I was going to say, yeah, gas station hot dogs are not that appetizing under the best of circumstances. And I'm not getting on a high horse about that. I've eaten my fair share. But I don't know that I would risk life and limb to nab one during a hurricane. I would never go out of my way to eat a gas station hot dog, even in weather conditions that weren't violently adverse.
Yeah. So while the first dude is still debating what to do with himself, in the background we see Gator pounce into the boat and start chomping on his girlfriend.
Yeah.
So she gets got.
Which is a nice little bait and switch, you know, because she's by the boat. You assume that he's going to get got because he's the one who's advancing shoulder deep into the water. Yeah, but then the movie is full of little tricks like that that I kind of appreciated. The scripting is pretty on point throughout. But yeah, all three of them don't make it. Once there's blood in the water, it's pretty much game over. Actually, the dumbest one survives the longest, although not by virtue of his wits. He's just
because he's inside.
Yeah, right. So all three of them are promptly dispatched. It's a kind of just fun little gory vignette. It has no consequence whatsoever. It doesn't affect the protagonist's chances of survival. It's just kind of something she witnesses out the window. And it establishes that there are, in fact,
many gators.
Yeah, exactly. The area is teeming with them. There's more dialogue at this point, more father-daughter bonding, I guess you could call it. And then soon enough, Wayne and another officer show up in a boat. And Wayne starts spelunking through the ground floor of the house where he finds the dog, who, I don't believe we've mentioned, has been out of harm's way this entire time. The movie mercifully keeps this dog upstairs for almost its entire running time, which is a nice touch, and we'll come back to that after the break. Wayne does not fare any better against the gators than the looters did.
Yeah.
He and his colleague are pretty much dealt with, if anything, even more efficaciously than the looters were. They don't last very long at all.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you see Wayne's death in the trailer.
Yeah.
Because it's this very arresting shot of him perched over the entrance to the cellar and shouting out to his partner outside, and then the jaws of the gator burst up out of the cellar and chomp him around his midsection.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes a while to die.
Yeah, there's a lot of thrashing. And his buddy gets it even worse. It's like straight up Temple of Doom. You get like multiple gators fighting over him, you know, just pulling him apart.
Yeah, and you see all limbs and head ripped off.
Yep.
Didn't skimp on the gore there. But yeah, while Wayne is down in the basement getting thoroughly chomped, Haley tries for a while to save him, which is more than I could say I would do, because he was fucking gator bait. He was chum pretty quick.
That might as well have been his name. Is like, you know, as soon as she,
oh, hey chum.
Yeah, like during the initial traffic stop, if she just rolled down the window and said, oh, what's up, gator bait. Like, why was that your nickname in high school again? He's like, who remembers?
So know. Long ago.
Yeah, right. Maybe they're like, their basketball team was like the Gainesville Gators or something like that. Who knows?
Well, I mean, she does go to University of Florida, and they are the Gators.
Oh, that's right. That's why. So. I don't know much of sports, but I probably didn't pluck that out of the ether arbitrarily.
No. So, cops are dead, and the boat, I guess, just kind of floats off. We don't really see what happened to the boat, which is fine, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of indicative of the way that we also don't see much of the gas station after the looters die. You know, the scope of the movie only expands beyond the basement when someone is torn to pieces, and then it shrinks again back to just Haley and her dad and their situation. So there is like a whole hurricane raging outside, but it's surprisingly easy to forget that sometimes. Like, outside of the rising water level, you don't hear a lot of... I don't know. This is more post-break business. More on that later. There's some talk between Haley and her dad about various plan Bs. They try out a couple. She tries to get to the second floor through some kind of hatch that has a piece of furniture on it or some boxes. I wasn't sure which. Something too heavy for her to lift.
I think furniture. And it wasn't even necessarily that it was too heavy. It's like the top of the piece of furniture keeps like bumping up against a piece of molding on the wall above.
Right, yeah. So she's effectively sealed in. And they've broached the possibility of swimming out through the overflow pipe, but he vetoed that because that's how the Gators got in the first place. So that's kind of their...
That's plan Z.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. She, at one point in the pursuit of one of these plan Bs, Cs, Ds, etc., finds herself in what proves to be a nest. Like, she comes upon, like, a little gator hatchery, like a tidy little pile of gator eggs.
Well, yeah, this is after she actually goes for the pipe.
It precedes the pipe because that's when she makes it outside. But yeah, I think that she's on her way to the pipe when that...
Well, yeah, because there's... From what I could tell of the geography of this location...
Right.
There's...
Which is a little nebulous. I mean, I don't need to see, like, an actual floor plan in order to get on board with a movie. But there are points when it's not really clear what she's up to or, like, how much distance she actually has to cover in order to achieve her ends.
Yeah. So she swims into this, basically looks like a hole in the wall, swims through that, and then ends up in this sort of Stygian chamber. it's just filled with detritus and pieces of corpses, and also, yes, it's a hatchery. There are alligator eggs there, some just shells, some full eggs. We even see a tiny gator hatch at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I have expected like an almost sort of Jurassic Park Dennis Nedry kind of situation. Wait, no.
No,
sorry.
I'm thinking of Lost World. Yeah,
yes.
It's Peter Stormare, whatever his character was named.
Right. He gets killed by all the tiny... dinosaurs.
Yeah, right. Dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs. Yeah, no. Wayne Knight gets poisoned in the face. That's my bad. Anyway, that does not happen in this movie, so I'm not even sure why we see the tiny gator shot.
I think it's just because we have to reference Jurassic Park in every other episode, or we'll lose our funding. It's something that's just become... Well, anyway.
Yeah. So... In the course of Haley getting over to this Stygian nest, however, Dave has to create a distraction by bashing on the pipes, which he does a little too well.
Yeah.
Because what he's actually bashing on, at least in part, is some kind of support truss that's holding up part of the floor above against the floor of the crawl space. Basically, he knocks it out. Conveniently, just as a gator is coming right for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically the floor falls on the gator, but it's still thrashing about trying to eat him. And eventually he kind of like half decapitates it with a shovel.
Mm-hmm.
So good on you, Dave.
Yeah, that must have taken some doing. I mean, their hides are tough. Thick. I don't know that from firsthand experience, but you know, I don't even know what their fucking feet are called. But so I'm not trying to front. I'm not an expert, but I don't have the upper arm strength to kill a gator with a shovel.
Yeah, no. So Haley, after some maneuvering, manages to make it out through the actual overflow pipe, which leads out of this chamber and out to the ocean, I guess, or at least the lake, whatever body of water they're adjoining, and has to dodge more gators, big surprise, but doesn't seem to have too much trouble with this. Meanwhile, the water has basically filled the crawl space. Dave is very nearly drowned.
Yeah, he's got like his nose to the ceiling, and all, you know, you've seen Titanic or whatever else, you've seen shots like this. People with just like an inch of clearance between the surface of the water and the ceiling, just trying to take their last breaths, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Haley manages to get back inside the house, figures out where her dad is, and starts trying to pull up floorboards with his crowbar that he thankfully left upstairs.
He's such a fucking handyman. I'll bet he keeps a crowbar in every room just to be on the safe side. You know?
I mean, he is in construction.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's true.
They do set him up to have tools for a reason.
Right.
As opposed to, hey, I'm an accountant. Look at all my crowbars.
Yeah, right. I'm just giving him shit because he's the kind of man who goes to patch up vents during a hurricane. You know, like.
Sure. Fair enough. And he loses consciousness. He gets drowned, effectively, just before she gets the floorboards up. But she pulls him up and manages to resuscitate him. And so, first thing she says is, all right, let's get to the car. And you got to know at that point that the car's a no-go.
Yeah, right.
Sure enough, they get to the front door and say, yeah, car's not going to work out. They spot the looter's boat over at the gas station, and they decide they're going to make for that. And this is the part that started to strain credulity for me a little bit.
Oh,
I mean,
the no splashing rule?
Right. Yeah. Even more than just the whole concept of I'm going to keep dodging all these fucking gators and not die immediately.
I'm going to come into their habitat and beat them at their own game.
But this particularly kind of rankled a little bit. Yeah, basically, the story is that if they carefully walk in the direction of the boat and don't splash around at all, that the gators aren't going to be able to catch them. It's like, well, I mean, that story didn't seem to apply in the basement.
Right.
Why does it apply here?
Yeah, I think it's in character for an alligator to take an exploratory nibble of anything its nose bumps up against. You know, just to see, is this edible or not? Are you food? If yes, get in mouth. That's basically their MO. So I feel like, I mean, I don't doubt that they're attracted to splashing, that they construe to be prey. But yeah, I mean, it seems like it's weird. It is like they become invisible. It's like
their vision is based on movement.
Yeah, right, there you go. That secured us another grand.
Just going back to it. Well, I mean, we're talking about lizards.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's
that's true.
It's less of a reach maybe than other references we've made.
Yeah, perhaps.
Anyway, this in the end gets dispensed with fairly quickly because the eye of the hurricane passes over top of them and the rain stops, which was part of their cover apparently, which I guess makes it vaguely more plausible that their plan would work outside but not inside. Uh-huh. Whatever. So then it's decided, well, Haley, you're faster than those gators. You can swim for the boat. And once again, I don't know that I buy that.
Right.
I'm pretty sure a gator is faster than, I don't know. She's like an upper echelon college swimmer, but not like a Olympic gold. She's not Michael Phelps.
Right. She's not a mutant. She's not.
But she successfully swims over to the boat. And also, not to keep harping on things that rankled plot-wise before we get to the break, but whatever, I'm thinking about it now. If the gator can pounce into the boat to chomp a looter, why didn't it just do it to Haley?
Yeah, the protagonist powers, I guess.
Yeah, I guess you just have to kind of suspend disbelief there. I just struggled a bit. Anyway, she gets the boat back over to her dad and the dog, and they get in the boat, and then, for some reason, they just watch the flood of water from the levees breaking coming towards them rather than trying to move. The wave doesn't look like it's going that fast. They could at least get some distance rather than ending up getting just fucking washed straight back into the house.
Right.
So yeah, I guess what I'm saying is this particular like 5-minute sequence was just riddled with stuff that kind of bothered me plot-wise.
Yeah,
mechanically.
Fair enough.
Anyhow, they're back in the house again.
Huh. So now the water is rising, not just in the crawl space, but in the house proper. So they're trying to make it to the roof. Like I said, the goalposts keep shifting. Dad finds a bunch of flares. Haley is going for one of the dead cops' walkie-talkies. They both have alligator altercations. The dad gets his arm bent at a 90-degree angle.
The wrong way.
The wrong way, yeah.
And then it's wrenched off.
It's one of the few shots in this movie that veers in the direction of New French Extreme, which is where Mr. Aja's background is in. There's an incident that I won't dwell on long. It's in the trailer where Haley is trapped in a bathroom with an alligator, and she lures it into it's a hybrid tub shower situation with like a sliding glass door, and she lures it into the tub and vaults over the shower door, thereby trapping it.
And
I feel like I could accidentally break my shower door in a moment of clumsiness just through gravity, like if I took a bad fall, you know. And this gator is utterly rebuffed by it.
Yeah.
Which was the only moment, that was my moment of eyebrow-raising incredulity, you know, like kind of what you were experiencing. I think you experienced it again here, too. But
it
took a little later to catch up with me, because the business with them going to retrieve the boat didn't rankle quite as much as it did with you. But at this point, I think we were on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
It doesn't help that there's a kind of gratuitous slow-mo shot, only one in the movie, to my recollection,
when she
makes it over the shower door. That was just a little Snyder-y for my taste.
Yeah, it's just like, it's already a pretty silly maneuver. If you had just kept it at regular speed, I probably would have been more inclined to stomach it, but
yeah,
that was just a little...
Yeah, the second and a half of slow-mo just gives me an additional half second to think, like, huh, this is dumb. if it just hadn't slowed down, my brain literally might not have, I just might not have soured on it. Seconds count.
Yes.
In these kinds of situations.
Oh, we neglected to mention also that the point at which Dave loses his arm, he does so in the course of saving the dog.
Oh, that's right.
So we can't let that go unmentioned.
And it's another nice little bait and switch moment, sort of like with the looter in the boat dying before the guy who's up to his shoulders in water.
Yeah.
Because you're
I figured the dog was toast.
Yeah, you're feeling a moment of relief because the dog is out of harm's way. Again, the dog has not been in harm's way for most of the movie's runtime, so you're not, like, inured to it. It's not like they keep putting the dog in peril. This is the one moment of, like, oh, the dog's gonna get it. The dog's gonna get it, and then the dog makes it. And just as you're letting out a sigh of relief, Dad loses his arm. So that it's just another instance of the screenwriters kind of being one step ahead of you, which is what this genre is all about.
Yeah. So they get upstairs, and they're trying to get the attention of some rescue helicopters that are flying overhead. Unfortunately, they just draw the attention of another gator who, because of the rising level of water, can now be swimming around this upstairs window. Sure enough, it smashes its way through while Dave is sort of dragging himself up the ladder stairs to the attic.
It is kind of galling seeing an alligator smashed through that window within 3 to 5 minutes of that one gator being trapped in the shower. It just drives home the fact that that particular alligator must have been the fucking runt of the litter. Like, he's gonna get shit about that for a long time.
That or, you know, the shower door was made of, like, inch-thick bulletproof lucite or something.
Yeah, right.
Silly. Anyway, Haley has to tussle with the gator that has burst into this upstairs room. Is it at this time that she gets, like, chomped and death rolled?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the gator is doing a barrel roll underwater, trying to drown and mangle.
Yeah, she's gotten bitten on the shoulder, much like her father was way at the beginning, and doing the spiral, trying to get her to pass out so he can eat her, I guess.
Yeah.
She successfully grabs the flare that she dropped and just burns the gator until it lets go. And that's mostly it.
Yeah, I mean, then she just swims out through the busted window
and
clambers onto the roof.
And there's another gator that, like, nearly gets her when she's pulling herself onto the roof, but it ends up getting swept away. And then Dave sort of punches his way through the roof. That consummate man that he is.
Yeah, with one arm and like one and a half legs. Just kind of, yeah.
Yeah, because we neglected to mention that in addition to the shoulder bite that he sustained, one of his legs is also gruesomely broken.
Yeah, it's in a makeshift splint that is...
Yeah, you know, a compound fracture, bone jutting out of skin initially before he forces it back in.
Again. Barry Pepper gets all of the new French extreme shots in this movie. I don't know what he did to incur the wrath of Aja, but... Or Aja, my apologies.
There we go.
But, yeah.
Hard habit to break, I guess.
Yes, unlike Barry Pepper's bones.
Got him.
So once they're on the roof, they flag down a helicopter, and she turns to the camera, to her father, and flashes a smile, holding a flare aloft, and the movie ends.
Yep, and roll credits over "See you later, alligator," which, you know.
Aha! It's just like, you could just imagine him, like, in the... in the editing room, just every artistic breakthrough he has is just, he just exclaims his own name like a Pokemon. Aha!
What we think his name,
yeah,
is.
Yeah, right.
All right, well, we'll go ahead and take our break now, and then we'll be back with our thoughts in just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
The state of Florida has issued a Category 5 hurricane warning. All residents must evacuate immediately. Grab your families, your loved ones, and get out. We won't be able to come for you.
Hello, listeners. It's Jim, here as always during the break, to tell you some stuff you probably already know. Please follow us on Twitter at Shock Doctors Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/shockdoctorspod, or check us out on iTunes. The podcast is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got an idea for a movie you'd like us to check out, feel free to send us a DM on social media or email us at shockdoctorspod@gmail.com. And now, back to the show.
Hello, can anybody hear me? I'm trapped with my father in our house in Coral Lake! Please send help!
Really?
Wait down here!
Pete, you hear that?
And we are back. So, Matt, what did you think overall about Mr. Aja's latest film?
Well, I said before the break at one point that the scripting was pretty much on point throughout. And what I really meant by that was the actual, like, accumulation of incident in the movie. Like, on a beat-by-beat basis, the bit with the cell phone was the only real dud for me. Like I said, the goalposts keep shifting. But it is compelling watching these characters trying to outwit these animals, and the tension keeps escalating, and there's just smart decision making in it from the characters and from the people penning the screenplay. Like I said, keeping the dog upstairs for most of the movie, because there's nothing more grating than no one wants to see the dog die, but that's not even it. It's the lingering question of, like, is this going to be when the dog gets it? Oh, now this is going to be when the dog gets it. It's just better if the audience isn't asking that question for minutes at a stretch, and for, like, one scene after another, because it gets wearying, and it's a distraction from the human characters.
Yeah, whether the humans are going to get it or
exactly,
not.
Exactly, which is the more important, pressing issue. So that's a good reflection of priorities. And incidentally, the dog does make it through to the end of the movie. This movie would get a clean bill of health from doesthedogdie.com. I think that's the URL. It's a valuable resource if you care about that sort of thing. I particularly like the verdicts, the, like, smiley face reviews of movies where almost all the human characters die, but the animal makes it out. Like Alien is a good example. It's good for animal lovers, not so good for Harry Dean Stanton lovers.
Oh,
which we should all be, because the man was a treasure. Where was I going with this ridiculous diatribe? Oh, I'm making a distinction here when I say that the script was mostly on point throughout. I'm making a distinction here between the plotting and, like I said, the accumulation of incident and the actual dialogue, which is mostly good but did occasionally ring false for me. I think that the family drama is a lot subtler and more effective in the first 20-ish minutes than it is for the rest of the movie. Like, I was impressed by the phone call between Haley and her sister and how much stuff it set up without the characters saying anything to each other that they wouldn't have just organically said. It's not like they're constantly reminding each other of things that ought to be common knowledge and go without saying, which is a big problem in a lot of kind of hastily or sloppily written movies when you're trying to establish backstory.
Yeah.
People just say things that they would have no reason to say to each other in the real world. There's none of that, and that's welcome. Some of the father-daughter stuff gets a little cloying later in the movie, and that bothered me a little bit. But even the dialogue is better than you would expect from a creature feature like this.
Yeah.
On average, I mean.
Yeah, in toto, I would be inclined to agree with you. It is, even when it gets, as you say, cloying and kind of grating, usually in these movies, there's at least a handful of lines
that are just complete clunkers.
They're just like, oh, jeez, really?
Yeah, right.
And while there were, again, plot beats that occasionally made me want to say something akin to that, there were never any lines of dialogue where I really just had to groan.
Yeah, there was one for me, but it was a relatively minor one in the grand scheme of things. It was when they're preparing to ascend into the attic. She's like got the ladder on the hook stick, whatever, you know. She's like pulling the ladder.
Oh,
down. You probably
where home is.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I lied to you. He has just had his arm torn off, by the way. And he's like, oh, I lied to you about the sale falling through. Because there was some crosstalk earlier about how he tried to sell the house and the deal fell apart on him or something. And then he's like, oh, I lied to you about that. I just couldn't let go. And I'm just thinking like, okay, now is not the time. Let's move on. And then they linger on it. And she says something to the effect of like, why can't you just forget about this old house? And he says, it's not just a house. It was our home. You know, and that like
the last place we were a family.
Yeah. That house home thing almost never, that distinction is like completely meaningless to me. I don't know if it's just because I'm like dead on the inside, but like, I don't think any variation of that line has ever worked for me. You know, let's make this house a home, that kind of thing. It's just it's just a sentiment that does not register and has never registered with me. It's nice to have a roof over your head, but that's about it. I'm very, very unsentimental where that's concerned.
Yeah. I'm a little bit more inclined to be sentimental about such things, but I think given the fact that that distinction, house, home, has been made in so many movies exact same
way. That's what I'm really trying to say. My unique affliction notwithstanding, it's just a bad it's a bad line.
Yeah, it's just kind of hack and rote.
And misplaced because it's come so near the end of the movie, and whether or not he lied about the sale falling to pieces is so unimportant right now in light of what they're up against. And he's like bleeding from his arm stump, you know, it's just, that's the only way I can reconcile it is that's what his fevered mind turns to as he's bleeding out. You know? Like he doesn't want to die with like a lie on his conscience. Like if they'd sold it that way, maybe I would have bought it. But like, yeah, it's just that moment didn't work for me at all.
But that's also one of those things that maybe it would have worked a little better if they were setting Barry Pepper up to die, and they were not.
Right, yeah. No, all three of them make it, the Haley and Barry Pepper and the dog. And that's kind of, I think, why the movie ends with see you later, alligator, because it does essentially end on a positive note.
Yeah. All the people who died don't matter. So.
Right.
So it's a happy ending. Poor Wayne.
Poor Wayne, yeah. Well, even the looters are even, like, not as... They're not like hateful caricatures the way you might expect in this situation. You know, they're all white.
They're all
white, first of all, which
a plus.
Yeah, right. So it's not like racially coded in kind of an ugly way, but yeah, because like when you see them in their parkas at a distance, I was like, oh, here we go. It's just like a French director not understanding nuance of American society and just like kind of blundering into being kind of quasi accidentally racist. But even that doesn't happen, which was, it was a load off my mind, I guess.
Yeah. In fact, come to think of it, everybody in the movie's white.
Yeah, which, you know,
which is it's a problem of a different
it's
kind.
It's not a
I
representation
suppose.
Win, but it's, you know, at least not, I don't know, racist propaganda.
It's not a win for representation, but it's dodging of misrepresentation, perhaps.
Yeah. I don't know. And this is true of a lot of movies, so I'm not necessarily knock and crawl for it, but I don't know how well this movie will hold up on subsequent viewings, just because, like I said, the goalposts keep shifting and so many things that Haley sets out to do come to naught. Like the boat. Yeah, like the boat. And yeah, exactly. The boat that they get into. And then they end up
right back in their fucking house.
Yeah, right. And all of the attempted rescues immediately get shut down by alligators and Wayne and the looter and whoever else. There's a bunch of attempts to flag down helicopters that don't go anywhere. And there's one that we didn't even touch on during the plot rundown, which is when she's in the nest zone, she finds a gun. And oh, you think shit. Like, oh, this is a huge asset. This is going to be a game changer. And then an alligator springs out of the water, grabs her arm in its jaws, and she expends the whole clip just to get it off of her arm.
Right.
And so then the gun is functionally useless. I don't actually know if she even retrieves the gun from its gullet. It just kind of dies and falls off of her, and she's a little more injured than she was before. It wasn't a win at all. It was just another setback.
Right.
So that stuff like that happens over and over again in this movie, and I question, although I enjoyed it, I feel like
I'm not sure I would enjoy it again.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to age especially well, because it's just going to be more aggravating watching them try to achieve ends that you know that they're not going to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, I was convinced that the gun wasn't even going to work.
Right.
You know, it had been submerged in water, and it's also not clean water. There's fucking detritus in it. Speaking of which...
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up. Go for it.
Well, I'm not convinced we're on the same page, but we might be. We'll find out.
Okay.
Sepsis.
Oh, sure.
Given the fact that they both start out with open wounds by the time even an inch of water finds its way into the basement, into the crawl space, and they only accumulate more wounds as the film goes on. And that water is going to be filthy.
Yeah.
This is a textbook case, pair of cases of sepsis.
Right.
And while they survive to the end, not to be Debbie Downer over here, but I would wonder whether either of those people would live through the blood poisoning that would follow.
Yeah, I mean, especially when the water is littered with corpses, not just trash. There you go. Yeah, no, I mean, that wasn't where my head was going. I was thinking more just like there's a lot of shots of Haley underwater with her eyes open. And there are some, it's not an omnipresent problem, but there are a couple shots where you can just kind of smell the chlorine. You know, it just doesn't, it looks too clean. It looks too.
Yeah.
It just like, she's just, there's a greenish tint to everything when she's underwater, and it looks swampy, but it doesn't look.
It's not gross enough.
And there's like always light streaming in through the floorboards when they're in the basement. And it's just like even high noon during a hurricane doesn't have that much light. It's just it's a little too, it's not quite dim enough for my liking. I mean, if the movie were completely realistic, it would be like pitch black.
Yeah.
For most of it, which
wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work. But I feel like they should have cranked it up a little bit more. Is I feel like this movie, given that it's set in a hurricane, it doesn't have quite as much atmosphere as it could. I'm thinking of like the gluttony victim in Seven, like his apartment. You know, that's the kind of vibe that I feel like a movie like this could have if it just had the art direction chops to go for broke. I don't know. Like I said before the break, it's surprisingly easy in the first half of this movie, at least, to forget that there's a hurricane outside. And that, for me, was the part of the movie that was the least satisfying. It gets exponentially more tense once the water is up to a point where you are officially in an alligator's turf, not vice versa. It's not an alligators in a house movie. It's two people in
gator territory.
In gator territory movie. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This is completely off topic, but that just kind of setting a movie in a hurricane where the hurricane has less relevance than you feel like it should.
You're not about to talk about the hurricane heist, are you?
I wasn't.
Okay, so
I proceed. About 45 seconds ago, I stifled the instinct to mention the hurricane heist. I was thinking of The Purge.
Oh.
The first Purge movie.
That's an apt comparison, actually.
Yeah, where all of this, you have this high concept premise that sets up just like wall-to-wall chaos on whatever scale you can imagine. And the first Purge movie is a fucking home invasion movie.
Right.
Which is the reason why I really didn't care for the first one very much, and why I like the first two sequels. Well, I guess there's only two sequels and then a prequel, but the two sequels are better simply because they embrace that sort of city full of chaos thing, and they make use of the all crime is legal premise much more than a house invasion movie.
Right.
So, yeah, in that sense, the first Purge and this movie kind of have that same issue, but it's a lot less of an issue in this movie,
mm-hmm.
just because it's got other stuff going on, whereas, again, first Purge just wastes that premise.
Yeah, I mean, at least in this movie, hurricanes do happen, and we've seen footage of, like, Katrina-caliber events, and that lends itself to human interest stories. Like, if they, like, a movie about a father and daughter surviving Katrina, for example, you wouldn't expect it to be some kind of, like, ensemble cast thing, necessarily, where you see the whole city underwater. It's a little easier to buy that this movie has a relatively narrow focus, just because this is a kind of disaster that we're familiar with to an extent. Whereas with The Purge is, like you said, more high concept, way more exotic, way more, like, dystopian.
Yeah. Now that you brought up the hurricane heist...
Please. No.
Just briefly. Uh-huh. In keeping with the fact that this movie is relatively more grounded, and I'm not even saying that in relation to Hurricane Heist, I just mean in general, and the hurricane happening is a plot device, but it's not really omnipresent in the same way. When they make it outside, there are shots of, like, the clouds swirling up above, and it did remind me, thankfully this didn't happen, but in the Hurricane Heist...
I'm glad that you stress the every time.
Oh,
God in
absolutely.
Heaven, if there was ever a movie that did not need a the in front of it, I feel the same way about The Midnight Meat Train.
Oh.
I think maybe it's the alliteration, like Midnight Meat, Hurricane Heist, but like the is just so fucking unwelcome and hateful to me. I can't even begin to describe, but yes, no, thank you for
Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, right.
The hurricane heist, the hurricane in that movie is alive, basically. There's a skull that appears in the swirling clouds.
What? I haven't fucking seen times. I haven't fucking seen The Hurricane Heist. That's amazing. I'm imagining, like, something out of another movie that I reference weirdly often on this show, the Brendan Fraser mummy movies.
Yeah.
Like the face in the
sandstorm. It's not far off from that, honestly.
Wow.
But yeah, beginning of that movie, it takes place in the past with the two brothers who are the protagonists, and it kills their dad.
Awesome.
And then it comes back. So it's not only is the hurricane alive, it's the same hurricane, basically.
This time it's personal.
So the fact that no faces came out of the hurricane in Crawl is disappointing from a schlock fan's perspective, obviously, but from every other perspective, thank fucking Christ.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess it's also a good thing that at the end of the movie, it didn't, like, pan up into orbit and reveal that this was, like, a spiritual successor to Geostorm or something, and reveal that it was, like, that there was some kind of sci-fi weather satellite, you know, causing all this mayhem. I don't know. I mean, as long as we're talking about movies that are just absolute turkeys, this is a film that on paper sounds like Sharknado, but with alligators. Like, a hurricane sweeps through a residential area, bringing a bunch of gators with it. It could have been complete schlock, and this movie is just assembled way more competently than I think anyone had a right to expect.
Yeah, as with most other movies we do for this podcast, it was on the radar a few months in advance, and I had it all scheduled out, and I was convinced, like, oh, yeah, this is going to be one of our schlocky episodes. And then all of a sudden it comes out, and I see the tomato meter, and it's like 87%.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really? And I mean, it's one of those situations where, considering how the tomato meter works, it's mostly like a bunch of 6.5 out of 10 positive reviews, because it's not like this movie's landmark type great, but I was expecting thoroughly rotten, you know, in the 20s somewhere at best. So, yeah.
It just proves the old adage that it's all about execution. I mean, I've said that over and over again.
Absolutely.
On the subject of Sharknado, I guess, or just shark movies in general, I think there's a reason design-wise, I'm talking creature design, I know that they're real animals, but, you know, why?
No, they made some poor decisions setting up this beast.
Yeah, I think one thing that sharks have going for them in a creature feature context is the dorsal fin. You know, like, that's just, you just look at it and you know what's up. There, underneath that fin, there is a whole ass shark swimming towards you. You know, and you know which direction it's headed based on the angle of the fin. It just communicates so much, so simply.
You know.
And crocodiles don't really have that going for them. What they do have, though, is that they look like logs. They look like they look like detritus. And this movie doesn't lean into that as much as I feel like it ought to. In fact, the only moment that does kind of capitalize that is near the end. It's like right before the window crash and the death spiral flare grab sequence. Haley gets spooked by an actual log. And it's like a blink and you miss it kind of thing, but it's the exact inverse of what I was expecting to happen, where she plants her foot on something that looks like a log and then it snaps at her. That never happens. Is that a missed opportunity? Maybe not, because I was expecting it, and it's good for a movie like this to dodge left when you think it's going to dodge right. But I don't know. I feel like a lot of the just head-on looks at the alligators are not very inspiring. And it's not like a CGI problem.
CG's fine.
Yeah, I think it's, again, just comes down to creature design. So I got a bone to pick with God, I guess, because that's just how alligators be. But like I suggested earlier, the movie does get scarier once the water reaches a certain level and you can't see the alligators the vast majority of the time. That's just a whole lot more effective. On the subject of rising water levels and missed opportunities, though, there's there's two shots. There's a pair of shots, one near the beginning of the movie and one near the end, of a door frame with the two daughters' heights marked on it as they get older. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they could, rather than having Barry Pepper pull out measuring tape and check his watch and crunch the numbers, they could have just cut back to that door frame like 3 or 4 times and shown like, oh shit, it's caught up to Haley age 6 and now it's at Haley age 9.
Well, wait a minute. But that's on the ground floor, though.
I know, but I just feel like it would be weird to have a door frame marked up like that in the basement, given
that people don't do that in their basement.
No, but like, it could have been a furnished basement, but then the whole movie would have been different. I don't know. I just feel like it's right there, man. I just wish that they'd done more with that.
I get what you're talking
somehow.
About. I just don't. I don't think it could have been sandwiched in that way.
Perhaps not.
Like, if, again, as you say, the entire movie was set up differently, and maybe it's a house with no basement, and the ground floor is where they start, and it just keeps getting flooded, then that could have worked. But yeah, I don't think the geography was there.
Yeah, no, perhaps not. And I just think if they had found a way to make that land, it would have been a really elegant solution to the establishing the peril problem. But yeah, sure. I mean, that's the smallest quibble that I've got. Which I guess means I'm out. That's usually how it goes.
Yeah.
I tend to save the really petty stuff for right near the end.
Yeah. As we usually end up saying with these, even a lot of the bad ones, performances were solid.
Yeah. Barry Pepper gets a couple good Saving Private Ryan screams in there. A lot of, like, when he's telling her, like, swim, swim. Yeah, gave me some.
At one point, it's swim. Yeah. Which, again, glass shark.
Yeah.
For those of you who aren't familiar, glass shark.
Yeah, treat yourself.
YouTube. Look it up. Fat kid, no go.
Pretend there's a corn dog at the end of the pool.
We shouldn't do all of glass shark. So,
no.
You got anything else?
I guess. So earlier in the movie, on the subject of swimming or swimming, on the subject of getting out of the water, there are a couple moments early in the movie, about the midpoint, I would say, And this gets back to what I said before about the layout of the house and of the basement being a little murky, more and more so as the water level keeps rising and features of the basement are obscured. You get that there are safe zones and danger zones, but it gets more nebulous as the movie goes on. And there are places where Haley has to swim what I consider great distances very quickly to get out of harm's way. And it's weird that none of them are like set up to be a big moment. And I like that her character is confident. I mean, she doesn't like that she didn't come in first place in that relay at the beginning of the movie, but she knows that she's a very capable swimmer. So there's none of this stuff that a lot of movies waste their time on.
I can't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Like the movie doesn't get bogged down in any of that crap, but still it feels like some of those basement clearing sprints should have been bigger moments than they were. And I made a note to myself, well, at least they didn't make it into some kind of cheesy juxtaposition where you see her swimming from an alligator and it cuts back and forth to like her like doing laps in the pool as a child or something. But then it does that though, and it's not as bad. Again, it's always about execution. It does happen near the end of the movie. It's just the movie saves it for when she's going for the flare.
Well, also it's not a straight juxtaposition of her like swimming a distance and her swimming laps, which that's what I was really reacting to in my head.
Fair.
Like, oh God, that's awful. No, it's more like when she's in the death spiral or whatever, like just moments of great drama where she isn't necessarily swimming in a direction or whatever, where she's got all these childhood memories. And that's why, it works better than it might otherwise.
Yeah, and she's physically spinning, so it makes a degree of sense that the editing would start to get all jumbled up and she'd have these memories kind of spiraling through her head. You know, I still felt like, of all the things to, like, predict, that was the one thing that was the one prediction I did not want to come true.
Yeah.
So I was, not overjoyed about that. But on the whole, it's a very solid movie.
Well, this has been another episode of the Shock Doctors Podcast. I'm Jim Smith.
I'm Matt Gerandasi, I think. Yes.
I am Matt Aja. And we are the Shock Doctors. We will see you next time. As always, we have some acknowledgments. Our music was composed by Will Connor. Audio for the bumpers was taken from Crawl 2019 official trailer, Paramount Pictures, uploaded by Paramount Pictures. All rights reserved. Our next episode will be up on Sunday, August 25th, and we'll be discussing that long-awaited childhood throwback, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. See you then.